This episode of the CMO Suite is brought to you by Connectivity Strategy, specializing in micro-targeted full-funnel media strategies for clients like WWE, Corona, First Watch, Coke, and more. Connectivity Strategy, national strength, localized approach. Visit them at connectivitystrategy.com. And as always, I like to throw a shout-out to my good friends over at Tumi. Product quality and selection are key attributes that have made Tumi the leading international business accessory and travel lifestyle brand. Simply put, there's no other product made like Tumi. And last but not least, No Kid Hungry. We are ridiculously proud that we make a contribution in the name of each of our 2019 guests to No Kid Hungry. Your tax-deductible donation will help us provide vulnerable kids in America with nutritious meals so they can focus on being kids, not being hungry. Holly, let's see if we can't start this show.
You're in the CMO Suite, the podcast for marketers who want to be in the know, presented by Connectivity Holdings.
Hello and welcome to Connectivity Holdings presents the CMO Suite. I'm your host, Sean Halter, and with me today, helping to produce and co-host with me, is my great friend, Holly Paperick. Hi, Holly.
Hi.
Please make sure that you don't let me just ramble on this entire time. Do you promise?
Oh, as if I can get a word in.
Kick me under the table. We're excited to have with us as a guest today, it's Jake Beniflaw. Dr. Jake Beniflaw is Executive Director of the Center for Multicultural Science, a leading U.S. nonprofit, nonpartisan think tank dedicated to representing women and ethnic and racial minorities in multicultural research and data science. Jake, did I get that close to being right?
Perfect.
Well, first of all, thanks for coming.
Thank you for
the invitation. Do you prefer that I call you Doctor? Dr. Jake? What do you prefer?
My friends call me Dr. Jake.
Talk to us, Jake, a tiny bit about your journey. I know that it probably sounds like to some of the people that are listening to this podcast, they're probably like, Sean is bringing doctors onto the show. What's going on? I mean, they probably all feel, I know I feel many cases that I definitely need a doctor in my life in multiple places. But part of what interested us with you was the fact that you're also an editor for the CMO Council. Am I correct?
Yes.
So how did that come about? Because it seems like there's two, not disparate worlds, but how do the two worlds kind of combine themselves together?
So you asked me a few questions here.
I did.
The first answer to your question is that every company needs more doctors. Not medical doctors, but more PhDs to understand more of the science than the art. Because marketing really is a combination of art and science. And I think the frustration that I've had in my career is that there's more art than science. So I left the industry about 20 years for a doctorate.
Interesting.
So I left the business world for academia. And if you're going to finish a doctorate, that takes about 8 to 10 years. So it's a big chunk of your life.
Yeah.
When you come out, you're very different. When I graduated in 2010, I quickly started a nonprofit.
Okay.
The Center for Multicultural Science.
Yeah.
Do the data science, multicultural marketing. And it really just changes the way you think and the way you approach marketing.
Had you been in marketing prior to that, I'm assuming?
My entire life.
Yeah. And so not to make you go backwards before you can go forward, but what was one of maybe either your first places that you started or one of the most important places to you in your background and your history before you decided, I'm going to get not out of this, but I want to be able to expand upon this, and I'm going to try to get my doctorate.
Well, you know, I think for the majority of people, you hit a wall or you hit a ceiling in your career. And I was empty intellectually. And I got to very high levels. I was working with the, you know, owners and CMOs and the CFOs, the C-suite. I was working with the SVPs of marketing. So I was in those conversations. And there was a lot to do. And I think that business moves so quickly that few of us take the time to understand where we're going to go and what may actually happen. So the one thing that the doctorate taught me was to think first and then move second.
Did you grow up here in the U.S.?
I grew up in Europe.
Okay.
So I moved from Andorra between France and Spain.
Is that Spanish or is that French?
It's Spanish.
Okay.
But French is my first language. So there's something about your hearing that is spot on. So I spoke French before I spoke Spanish.
Okay.
And then I spoke Spanish before I spoke English.
Yeah.
And so I'm 50 now, and so I don't speak very much French. I speak Spanish fluently, but grew up in Europe until I was 7, and I've been here since 1976.
And where were you when you moved over with your family? What brought you over to the States?
The American dream for my parents. And we were a middle-class family in Europe and had no reason to leave. But for my parents, they wanted us to stick the have the family together. they felt that the United States was going to provide us with a better future, and it has.
So it's amazing to kind of hear that journey a little bit, obviously, right? Because not only did they accomplish the American dream, but you came over here, you had jobs in marketing, and I want to unpack that. The point that you made was just the fact that you felt like at some point marketing had become somewhat unfulfilling for you,
yep.
and you felt like there must be something deeper that you could pull out of that. And so I know any of us that work in this industry, no matter whether you're a CMO or a CEO or you're a marketing coordinator or whatever you're at, sometimes you get into this industry because you feel like it's going to be fulfilling. And in many cases, it is. You can do great work and be fulfilled with some of that.
Yeah.
But there is a lot of empty moments. There are a lot of moments where you feel like, geez, I've fought so hard to get this, whatever this is, and I don't know that I love all of my clients. I don't know that everybody understands what I do. And that's really hard.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people, just getting into a company is the end goal for them. It wasn't for me. You know, I worked for a lot of different clients in a lot of different industries. The only reason I love marketing is because I work with really interesting, smart people who are trying to do really good things for society. Because their brands represent big things, big solutions to big problems. But I think for me, I was more of a cognitive kind of kid. And I have a lot of conversations in my head before I say things. And so I always think about a lot of different things. And I think work is work, you know, like we go to work and by the end of the day, you're so tired. And sometimes you go, did I really, you know, use 100% of me today? And sometimes you say no. And I felt because marketing moves so fast that I was in that kind of fast moving train where we were just headed in a direction. And many times you didn't have time to change course because we just needed to get there first or we just needed to get there. And so for me, it was a detour that I do not resent. In fact, it was a life-altering moment. And if more people understood the value of a higher education and had the opportunity to go, they would do it.
You know, within the title, and we talked about it just at the opening of the show, that the Center for Multicultural Science, it's a nonprofit. It's dedicated to representing women and ethnic and racial minorities. So obviously you check the box of a minority to some extent. The female element has become such a topic of conversation, certainly this year. And, you know, while I've been doing this for 20 years, the truth of the matter is, you know, I'm a 49-year-old white guy from Ohio. Yeah. And it's impossible for me sometimes to understand what women have to go through to even get into the elevated positions that they get into. And we had a little bit of a spirited discussion yesterday, which was great and interesting. Again, just talking about the fact that even with all the craziness that's going on, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat or whatever side of that you lean on, there's more light shined on that this year. And if there's nothing good that comes from some of this discourse, it's the fact that there are some real conversations taking place right now about women and minorities and their role not only in society, those opportunities in some cases where some people may feel like you get what you get and you fight for what you fight for, and in other cases where many of us have to kind of say, look, there's it may not be how I've run my business, but clearly there have been some people that have run their business and kind of said, you know what, you stay in the position that you're in.
So I literally fell into multicultural marketing, Hispanic marketing in 1991. This was, I think, Gulf War I, and I couldn't get a job in the mainstream marketing field. So I fell into Hispanic marketing from the very beginning. And so I began to see marketing from a very multicultural, you know, sort of a minority marketing perspective in those days. Today, it is becoming more and more mainstream marketing because of the changing demographics.
Sure.
So mainstream marketing, to me, is now driven by the multicultural consumer. We're in Los Angeles today taping this, and 80% of LA is multicultural. The minority is white. And, you know, more and more of these big cities are going to look more and more like Los Angeles, which then begs the question, what does mainstream marketing look like in the future?
Sure.
Which speaks to the book that I'm writing, coming out in 2019.
Please, let's talk about it. Let's jump in.
So the title that, you know, the publisher needs to approve the title, but I'm calling it now, the working title is Rewriting Marketing in Multicultural America. So essentially, because of the technological, media, and consumer changes, marketing has changed. In other words, it is no longer an afterthought to mainstream marketing. It now needs to get elevated and integrated into marketing. And that is the piece that needs to sort of get into the heads of CEOs in the 21st century. There's a data piece that I want to mention real quickly coming out of the CMO Council study that they had conducted last year. And roughly one in two CEOs in this country do not think that Latinos and multicultural consumers are mission critical.
Do you think that's, not to unpack that, but do you think that's because they still just don't understand the buying power of that segment of the audience? Is it that they're so far up and they're so removed from the fact that money still speaks and there's a lot of buying power in those that are willing to say, I want to speak to you the way you want to be spoken to, no matter where you come from, no matter who you are, and no matter how you are?
To some degree, I would agree. I think fundamentally, it's a mindset. It's a mindset shift that hasn't changed. I think let's call it reframing marketing, because I think those that understand the changing demographics have sort of altered their thinking to it, so they're aligned with the changing demography. When you talk to a CEO and they're building a business, they're not building a business on paper. They're walking around and they've built it in their head. What's in their heads may be rooted in the past. And many times they're building businesses with people they've worked with before in the past, many of whom also share those mental models. So I'm not surprised that 1 in 2 or 55% of CEOs today don't understand the value of these consumers for their business. Here's the catch.
Yeah.
What's also interesting and sort of like, you know, opposed to the CEO, about 70% of CMOs, according to the CMOs Council study, 67% of CMOs understand the value of Latinos and multicultural consumers to marketing. In other words, those that are closest to the customer and
sure.
to the market
understand
the purchasing power and everything else. The mental models above them are the things that we need to kind of work on and change.
And do you unpack that in the book a bit?
I do. And I talk about data science as well, because I think marketing is going to be data driven. So going back to the art and science piece, you know, I think art is beautiful. It tells a nice narrative. And I think that's always going to be important, right? Just as what we're talking about today. But data will be driving decisions more and more data science becomes integral or plays a core role in decision making. In other words, data science
takes the guesswork
cuts
out.
Across
that's right.
every part of the organization, whereas today it may just be a part of it.
Well, and it takes out some of the guesswork, right? So to your point, the fact that a CEO only knows what a CEO knows, and
right.
they only live the life that they've lived, and if they're a 55-year-old white guy from Ohio or Nebraska or wherever, it's the life that they know.
Yeah.
Data science is basically saying, look, let's take the guesswork out. Let's actually strip off some of the initial parts that show ethnicity and age and demographic and all that, and look at the numbers first, and then overlay that back on top, because you might be surprised at what you actually see.
So the work that we're doing at the center speaks even to a bigger problem, which is who's actually developing the algorithms in data science. So when you're looking at the data, you know, you're looking at the data from your perspective. When we're developing code, when we're writing code and we're trying to analyze things, we're embedding our own biases and limitations and worldviews in there in addition to our gender.
Is that almost like the old, whoever wrote the test, it's going to skew towards what they know, right?
Exactly. And so it's no different than when you were in high school and your science teacher gave you a book written by a male and a female. And when you read the book, you're like, I could see that point of view being so different, because women do write differently and they do think differently.
Sure.
And men, everyone has a different point of view. So that is no different to algorithms. And so when you exclude women, you know, you go to these conferences and 8 out of 10 people are men, white men. So that's something that we have to change. And as we become a much more multicultural society, more and more of our algorithms or positions in data science need to be representing the people of society. So our goal is to put more women and more underrepresented minorities in data science positions in key companies so that we can make a better America.
Do you think there's a fear, right? Do you think there's some fear of those who have been in power, right? And again, leaving politics out of this and talking more just about the power of the top part of that chain. And it's all still very relationship driven. Any businesses, no matter how much data or science we throw into it, the reality is you're going to want to do business with somebody you know, like, and trust.
Yeah.
Because that's still rooted into our psyche and our hearts. Do you think there's still this fundamental element of, that's all great, Dr. Jake, but at the same time, I want to hire Mike because I knew Mike and I can trust Mike. And even though Gail may be more qualified and she's got this multicultural background that I know could speak to that, gosh, I just can't.
So,
I can't help myself.
So what you're
is that happening?
Yeah, what you're addressing is a fundamental problem that, you know, is pervasive in corporate America.
Yeah.
And let's just kind of focus on one area. Let's just talk about boardroom diversity. The way that you described people connecting to people, this sort of network connection approach, is why boardrooms are so not diverse. because, oh, you know, I trust you, and we're about getting things, moving forward. The more diverse the group is, the more solutions you bring to the table, because everyone brings different perspectives to something. It's one thing when the Army needs to get to point A, and you're like, follow the rules, let's just all, listen to me, and let's just move. That's one thing. But when you're at the very top of an organization, you need thinkers to understand where the gaps are, where the holes are, and where the opportunities are.
Yeah.
And the more diverse, the better. Now, the problem is that you go back to your – this is a really good thing, right? Because these schools at the very top, the schools in the Northeast, have very diverse schools, classrooms. But the boardrooms don't reflect even the most diverse Ivy schools – the boardrooms still continue to be what they are.
Sure.
So, as they say, bring one along with you, right? So, let's just make sure that, if you make it to that position, bring another person just like you so you can, increase the diversity. The diversity is a fear for those who aren't used to it.
Well, in some ways, that's what any, not to, again, get into a political discussion, but anybody that we don't know, right? I mean, I grew up, as I said, in Ohio. My grandmother was probably incredibly racist. I didn't understand it at the time.
Yeah.
But once you meet people of color, you meet people who are of different things, we're all people. It doesn't matter.
Like if I needed a blood transfusion, you don't ask for,
sure.
Who's the guy?
That's right.
Or the woman. So this is really about tolerance and tolerating differences. And, everything that we're experiencing today is really about a fear given the changing demography. No one wants this world to change significantly. People are much more comfortable with the old world and the views that they actually grew up in. The fact that America is changing slowly and eventually significantly is a fear for a lot of folks.
And CMOs are trying to navigate that space, right, to some extent. So yeah. what do you feel like kind of surprises you most about CMOs today?
I think that they're very courageous. I think that they've always been fact-based. They operate based on numbers. Believe it or not, I've never met a CMO that is biased. I think they all see green in everyone.
Sure.
And I think that's a very smart CMO approach. I think what challenges me is this disconnect between a CMO and a CEO, based on what I just talked about from the CMO Council. I expected there to be more synergy and alignment.
But the data will help with that, right, to some extent. I mean, I do feel like it's becoming, and again, obviously, you could certainly dispute me. You probably know much better than I, especially considering the fact that you're a doctor. And Holly, I am not. I am not a doctor.
He knows a doctor.
I've played one on TV.
Yes.
But I guess where I feel like I'm seeing something interesting is the fact that there is so much data that's now available. So again, it's taking some of the guesswork out, and it seems like a CMO is being held to such a higher level of responsibility, and they must understand the entire sales funnel now to some extent. So maybe that linear approach, or the fact that they are becoming much closer to CEOs, and in some cases they're becoming the CEOs, that should help, I would think.
I think that there's going to be greater alignment moving forward. I think that...
How long will it take?
Well...
Will I still be around, doctor? Can you check my pulse? How am I looking?
So I think that, and don't hold me to this, but I do think it's going to take a generation, right? I do think significant change will come with new DNA in these different organizations. I'll tell you why. Because the new generation are between 40 and 55% multicultural. And so those folks are going to get into companies, and the workplace will change gradually. And so everything that we're seeing today in terms of, hey, I want flexible hours, I want meaning in life, I want all of these things. Companies can't just say, you're going to listen to me. It's not going to happen.
Tried that. It doesn't seem to work well.
It doesn't work.
Does not work.
But here's, Sean, I think we have to differentiate one thing. CMOs don't look at the world in aggregate. They don't look at the U.S., as a whole. I think if CMOs looked at where they win or lose, what markets they can win and not win, right? Focus on the L.A.s, the New Yorks, the Miamis, the Chicagos. If you look at the top five markets, they're going to be the top five markets in the country. And those markets are multiculturally driven. So there is no way. Exactly. There is no reason other than not looking at the business this way. So this is really about reframing marketing as opposed to reinventing it with different people.
Well, and even as much as we're, again, hearing about us trying to create a little bit of some isolation within the U.S. and tariffs and trade wars and all that kind of stuff, it's amazing how many global CMOs that we may talk to on the show, or people that, that have global positions now, where the U.S. is a part, but it's this part, and all of this other stuff is either as important, or you know, you start dipping into countries like India, which are really trying to reinvent themselves to some extent, and China, which still obviously is a communist country in many ways, but has so much opportunity and free market that's baked into it that depending on the size of your company, you might find that you don't have any choice now, because if you want to be beholden to shareholders and more of your revenue might be based outside again of the U.S., you better make sure you kind of jump in with the soup. So
I still think that if you look at global versus U.S., I still think, you know, somewhere between 50 and 60% of their volume comes from the U.S.
Yes.
You know, I think that's in the annual reports, but I think that's pretty accurate. Yeah. I think the one thing I've seen about, you know, when you talk about global marketing, global CMOs or global CEOs is, you know, when you work with these global CEOs, they look at consumers as buyers. They don't think about the Latino buyer and the white buyer.
Sure.
And so when you work in Australia and Europe and, you know, in the United States and South America, you get this real like marketing-centric perspective that takes away any bias.
So we were talking just a bit again about the fact that there's a global community to some extent, whether it's a CEO or a CMO, and they're trying to navigate their way through that, correct?
Yeah. And I think I've worked with one global CEO, and the one thing that I saw in him was that he didn't really see a bias in the consumer, which I think is what stops or inhibits some of the current CEOs in the U.S. Because those in the U.S. see the world through the U.S. lens. The global CEO looks at sort of everything through this sort of higher level marketing lens that strips away any biases or stereotypes.
Yeah.
When you strip that away, you're looking at a consumer, you're looking at a buyer, you're looking at the potential. And I just wish, Sean, that more and more CEOs in the U.S. had global experience.
Yeah, and I guess that some of that is changing to some extent. And again, as you add more women, and specifically more women, in addition to more minorities into that, that changes the way that we look at everything as well.
I believe so.
We've got about five more minutes left. Appreciate, again, you joining us for the show. It's Dr. Jake Benaflaw. You got a new book coming out at some point.
Yep.
We're still working through the working title on it. We'll make sure that once you've got that, we layer that in there. So as we wrap this, I think the last question that I want us to maybe talk about just a tiny bit is just, what do you think is the CMO's biggest challenge, and how can they kind of navigate that changing landscape?
You know, I think for the CMO, they're going to tell you, obviously, understanding the changing landscape, because I think that's their job. You know, I think for the CMO organization to be most effective, they really need to focus more internally as opposed to the external.
When you say internal, do you mean on themselves and how do
culture of the organization.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, it's easy to learn the changing demographics, the business, the channel, the sales, and the competitive set, right? So all of that stuff is not easy. And that's what they're focused on. But to me, the difference between three CEOs is which one can navigate, you know, most effectively within their organization to get to their destination. So it really is about being a change agent or being a transformative CMO, as opposed to just a CMO that looks at the external and grows.
Is there anybody you feel like is getting it right? Anybody that you name drop to say, I think this person is really doing a fantastic job?
Yeah.
I just threw you on the spot at the tail end with a question I didn't tell you I was going to ask.
No, you know what? That's okay. I can tell you right now, this is a perfect example of a company that is not based in the U.S. It's a car company, and you may be driving their car today, which is Honda. They've been in the market for about 40 years. They don't look at these consumers with the same worldview that many of these folks in the U.S. do. They've stuck by Hispanic, Asian, African American, everyone, and looked at them in the same way. Their value is equal. Right, within the organization, they're making cars and building models based on these different generational levels, the millennial and so forth. And so they understand who's driving what in the United States. Honda's a great client. They're a great company. Their values is about respect. And they understand that when they embrace the diversity within the United States, they're going to grow. And they're one of the best car companies, one of the fastest growing car companies in this country.
It's interesting, again, just to see what new positions will kind of come out of this conversation. We were talking before the show Dr. Jake about somebody that we recently interviewed with State Farm, and the title was CFO of Marketing. And I just found that to be such a fascinating title, that literally because State Farm spends so much in the space that they wanted to invest in a new position to some extent that's out there. And so I feel like the more I see some of the industry trends, the more I start seeing more either CMO of multicultural affairs or more people kind of in that position who are almost guardrails or gatekeepers to make sure that things don't slip too far back. And I'm assuming you're seeing some more of that yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I think Allstate is also another organization that's done a lot in this country and has done really well as a brand. I'm not surprised to see a CFO within the CMO organization, because as you're trying to sort of like squeeze the bottom line, you need greater safeguards. And so, you know, this is no different than one company having multicultural marketing centralized and having a center of excellence, and then other companies who are in a different evolutionary state or stage don't need it, and everything is centered through the organization by brand. So it's all about structure, depending on that organization and their evolution. So to me, it could be a trend. It could also reflect what these companies are trying year to year, and they disband or disown a center of excellence, and they now sort of do different things.
Well, you got to try different stuff. And if you're not, you know, if you're not changing, you're dying. That's certainly what's happening out there, and consumers are going to require it. So once again, Dr. Jake Beneflaw, thank you so much for joining us on the CMO Suite. I told you it would be painless. How did we do? We do okay?
Oh my God, I'm alive.
You're alive. You made it through. And Holly, you made it through as well.
Oh my God, I've been fascinated. Listen, sorry, I've just been listening.
If you want to find out more about Dr. Jake, you can find him on LinkedIn. Obviously, you can Google the name, and you can always visit thecmosuite.com for this episode and more information on Dr. Jake. And that is going to wrap this episode of the CMO Suite, presented by Connectivity Holdings and brought to you by Connectivity Strategy. Holly, thank you for co-hosting with me today.
Absolutely.
Dr. Jake, thank you very much again for joining us.
Thanks, Sean.
And as I said, you know, it's an interesting opportunity. The world is changing out there. It doesn't matter who you are. At this point, it certainly doesn't matter where you live. You need to make sure that you're looking at diversity, you're looking at community, and you're speaking to every audience, not necessarily just the audience that you know or that you've known in the past. And with that will come opportunities and opportunities to grow. And that is certainly what this all is about. So once again, thanks for joining us on the show. Holly, if you wouldn't mind, please take us out of the show today.
Thanks for hanging out in the CMO Suite. The podcast for marketers who want to be in the know. Presented by Connectivity Holdings.
You're a C-level manager. You shouldn't have to know the difference between behavioral or contextual targeting. But your agency should. Uconnects provides brands and biddable teams direct access to platforms like The Trade Desk, Google, Amazon, Facebook, OTT, and more. Their U.S.-based traders can train your in-house team or provide complete transparency with no minimums and CPM-based service pricing for true transparency. Something Mighty Hive, The Trade Desk, and Centro simply don't offer. Tired of being the smartest one in the room? Reach out to Uconnects today for a free demo. Uconnects, the world's leader in true, transparent, biddable media.